C4. Number 7A.
Yes, so you can see if one reads the textbook with a good sense of the divine system of reference, one begins to see that Mrs. Eddy brings out in each chapter a very fine structure, a structure that is always adapted to the subject, and we will see how she adapts it usually to the subject when she uses the 7x7, when she uses the subtones of the days of creation, when she presents it in the 4x4, so that this week, naturally, we can't take that whole subject in any detail at all. I have once started to do that way back in 1956 to 58. I started to show the detail of the structure in London, and I only came up to the fifth chapter, and it's taken me 112 hours teaching just to take five chapters. I did it rather in detail because I wanted to prove that we are not making up these things. See, the criticism is always that we make things fit the way we like it. And so I presented those five chapters very finely, slowly, from every angle. And those tapes are still available. They show from where to where the tones run, from where to where the subtones run, and what the epitomes are for those tones and subtones. It was an interesting experience. I went always over to London for a weekend every second month, and I gave about 8 hours each weekend. And then I came to the chapter on animal magnetism and did that. And the moment I wanted to go on to the sixth chapter, I just felt I couldn't go on anymore. And the feeling was that I can't go on because I felt I didn't have enough of the tonality of the Christ impact. Because that, with the fifth chapter, the Christ tone came in, and so I left it and I went back to the prophets. I thought the prophets would give me the spiritual tone of the Christ, and so I spent a few years on the prophetic age, and then that brought me further to the epistles. And only then, when I have seen that, I took up those talks again in 1966, nearly 8 years later, and gave the Christ chapters. The chapter 6, 7, and 8. And actually, I had a kind of an experience that Mrs. Eddy must have had with that sixth chapter. You know, the sixth chapter was the last chapter she wrote. And she wrote it in that quiet period when she had disorganized the church in 1888, and she went back into solitude and was thinking out the whole subject of science anew, and the outcome of it was that she added the chapter Science, Theology, and Medicine, which is such a strong chapter in regard to what science means, and also at the same time rewriting every one of her chapters by putting them into the spiritual order as we have it today. So that was a great period of insight for Mrs. Eddy, of clear vision of the system. And also when I took the sixth chapter, I could hardly go on to the seventh. It took me, I don't know how many hours, those three chapters I presented in 56 hours. It took me as long as that to present, because it seemed as if at that point something has happened, namely that one began to see that science, or Christian science, is the world, is really the science of the world, and that it is not something different than what the other sciences are trying to see. And at that point, we began to see, and from that point on, really we began to see that the thought in the world, the scientific thought in the world, has the same trend, was asking fundamentally the same new questions that Mrs. Eddy was presenting in the sixth chapter. And it is actually from that inception of the sixth chapter that we have drawn afterwards all those new subjects that we have been presenting over the last 9 years, like the subject of oneness, the subject of metaphysics to science, the subject of cybernetics, the subject of the levels, the subject of text interpretation. All that really came out of a deeper understanding of that sixth chapter. These tapes also are still available, and they give the layout from page to page, from line to line, where the individual tones run. If some who are here have really done what I have asked them to do on the prospectus for this class, namely to try to read the textbook and see if they can feel the breaks where the subject changes, the subject of mind changes to spirit, where it changes to soul and so on. And if you have done that, I'm quite willing to give my findings so that you can compare them. I will just give you, if it's needed, say, the page and line of the main breaks. But I don't think that many had the time and perhaps the tonality to do that. In this week, we don't want to do that. What I want to do is to go over the 16 standpoints in a general way, so that first that grid of the 16 is engraved within our consciousness, so that we have a table of orientation for our thought, so that we can place, so to say, every problem into the right place value within the matrix and know where we are. So we try to go out from that standpoint that we feel we are on Robinson's Island, and now we are trying to reason out what these 16 chapters must tell us. We are not going to ask what do they tell us, because by going back to the text and asking what does the text say, we are now going to the indices and reason out as good as we can what the text must tell us. Or with other words, what God asked Mrs. Eddy to write. She was under the dictates of that matrix, of those categories, and she was not free to write what she wanted to write. She had to follow the categories of being. So let's try to do it, and I try to do it in a questioning form, because we can't do it with the class. It would take too much time and too much guessing, perhaps. So I try to think the way you would perhaps ask questions, and in this way help perhaps to, say, educate thought in logical reasoning. We take the first box, word as word. When we say word as word as Christ, word as Christianity, the first term of the two are always the vertical, and the second is always the horizontal. We have to know that, we have to have that convention, so that, say, if we say Christ as Christianity, then we know that that is something else than Christianity as the Christ. If I say Christ as Christianity, then the accent is on Christ, the first term. Therefore, the first term is the vertical, the column, and the second is the secondary one, namely the horizontal. Can you see why the Christ as Christianity is something else than Christianity as the Christ? In algebra, it would be the same. In algebra, if you would just think in mathematics, then Christ multiplied by Christianity is the same as Christianity multiplied by the Christ, because A multiplied by B is the same as B multiplied by A. So matrix work is different than algebra, even if the signs which we use are similar to algebra, the meaning is completely different. There, the first of the two symbols is the dominant, and the second is subsidiary, is secondary. So here we have, as the first point of intersection, word as word, which in the textbook is the chapter on prayer. But we don't know that it is a chapter on prayer. We only know that it is the word as the word on that island. And so we are thinking out, what on earth does this represent? So we would think very methodically and say, all right, the accent is in the word that it represents the revelation of God's nature. And we would say to ourselves, oh yes, we really would like to have God's nature revealed to us. And the moment I say to us, I have touched the human, you see, I have touched the human, so I have at once touched the point of intersection with the human, and the word in the human would say to us, yes, I would like the nature of God to be revealed to me, to us, and therefore I would have to accept that nature. I would have to see that only that nature can understand God's nature, that like knows like, therefore only my God's nature within me, God's nature within me, is the proposition, is the real starting point. And now you have word as word. It's a real starting point to be and to experience God's nature. You look at me as if I had been speaking in Chinese. No? So I tried to say it in double Dutch. Okay? Can you see where we start? Every investigation really starts with the subject. The subject is God. We don't know what God is. So we see what we have to know is God's nature, and that all what we want really to experience in the whole 16 chapters is really God's nature. That's what we want to experience. And in order to experience God's nature, I have to first see what is God's nature. And so there must be a revelation of God's nature. I don't need to have that revelation, because in the introductory class, before I was cast on Robinson's Island, I have heard that there are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So I see, oh fine, then all I have to do from my standpoint is to accept that proposition, that God's nature is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And so in prayer, I accept God's nature to be my nature. That I have no other nature but God's nature. And so I begin to ponder and to worship, so to say, God's nature in me. I begin to say, all right, that's God's nature. I'm going to use that God's nature. I'm going to stick to that God's nature. I'm going to be honest in sticking to it. I'm going to be very devoted to God's nature. I'm going to affirm that God's nature. I'm going to trust and just worship that God's nature. I have told you the seven prayers now. See. But the tonality you have caught, the tonality is that our proposition is to take God's nature as our nature. Then we pray. We pray only then when with God's nature we are approaching God, because then God is within us. If I approach God with God's nature, then God's nature is within me, and that is answered prayer. So praying aright is answer prayer. It's not praying for something, but is an answer prayer. I affirm within myself the very existence and activity of God's nature. That's my proposition from where I go out. Can you see that right at the beginning of this matrix, because it's a matrix of divinity, right at the beginning of that matrix, I leave the whole world behind me. I'm not going first to investigate what is the world and may I come out of it and how can I get out of it? Shall I take it with me? Can I improve the world within me in order to get into heaven or so? No, I leave the whole false system of reference behind me because this matrix is about the divine system of reference, the divine matrix. So my whole starting point is that I have left the world behind me, and as I say, now what is my starting point? My starting point is the Word as the Word, namely to accept as my nature the nature of God. The using of God's nature and using it as desiring it with all my heart, using it by reflecting God's nature as far as I can, by using God's nature as being very strict and within me in following and sticking to God's nature, to be honest in it, to try to gear my thoughts, my actions, my wordings according to that God's nature, to devote and consecrate my life to God's nature, to affirm God's nature and deny the other nature, and see the holiness of that God's nature. I have again gone through the seven. If you have tonality, you felt it. If you don't have tonality, you can't feel it. Then it was just words, random words, but I have gone now through the seven prayers. So with that attitude, God's nature is within me. Like knowing like. So I have a good starting point. I have established God's nature in me as a proposition. Only as a proposition. Why? Because it has not yet had the Christ aspect in it. Therefore, in order to see that this proposition which I have accepted is really working as really a Christ, then I need another presentation. I need the Christ presentation of this Word. And so I come to the Word as the Christ in my line of thinking. Again, the Word remains the same Word. See, we keep the pedal note, namely God's nature, the revelation of God's nature. But now, more than in prayer, where I just have accepted God's nature as my starting point, as my proposition, as my presupposition for going any further, I come now to the point where I say, and what does that do? I come now to the Christ activity. And this is Atonement and Eucharist. In Atonement and Eucharist, we feel that this God's nature, the divine nature in me, must have a Christ. The Christ here is manifestation in spite of the flesh, in spite of the human. Therefore, can you see what it must say? What it must say, you see, is that the Christ nature within, that God's nature within me must therefore manifest itself within me. How does it manifest itself within me in spite of matter? By overcoming all that is wrong in me. So, Atonement and Eucharist will tell us how the divine nature will overcome the human at every point. This is a quotation from that chapter. That the divine must overcome the human at every point. Can you see? First, the tonality of the vertical. Again, God's nature. But in prayer, that God's nature is within me. Has it a Christ or not? Yes, it has a Christ, and I come to atone in the Eucharist. Namely, it overcomes the human in me at every point. So we have the manifestation of God's nature in spite and against the flesh and the human. That is all that has to do with atonement, the crucifixion, the Last Supper, and so on. It's always the overcoming of the human nature, the flesh, through the divine nature. By the way, would you have liked to put into your chart, just try to put only in one box, just a short keynote, key tone, keyword, huh? What do you want to put into prayer, huh? You could say, accepting God's nature, huh? For instance, huh? Accepting God's nature in me, huh? And it's even clearer, huh? Perhaps put it that way. I don't want to write it down because my pencil are so thick when you have to write on the screen, and it's I never can put it into a little box. So, but that's why you have a chart before you. So just put in here in prayer, what did you say? Accepting God's nature in me, huh? Or in us, yeah. Well, in me, then it's very near to you. Hmm? Then we came to atonement and Eucharist, and here we could say what, for instance? The divine overcomes the human, huh? In me, huh? Let's say the divine in me, the divine in me, then we take it from prayer, the divine in me overcomes the human in me. The main thing is that you get the tonality, you see that you are not feeling fixed to just one wording. I could just, in the same way, I could have worded it differently and said, the God-like in me overcomes the God-unlike in me. Would have been the same tonality-wise. All what you have to hear is now that the vertical, the divine nature in me has the power of the Christ, as the Christ power of manifesting itself in spite of its opposite, whatever that opposite is, in spite of the flesh, in spite of the human, in spite of matter, in spite of material sense, in spite. Actually, when you go through the seven, then you have mind in spite of its opposite, spirit in spite of its opposite, soul in spite of its opposite, principle in spite of its opposite, you see? You can enlarge it then through the seven synonymous term. We'll do that when we go through the chapters. But first, I just want to give you the key tones so that you feel that no box repeats itself, that these ideas are unique. Let's flow further and reason it out as the way you may reason it. If you had a chance to ask question, you may ask, well, when we come to Christianity, and Mrs. Eddy explains that Christianity is the outcome of the Christ activity, then you would say, now, what would we call the outcome of the Christ activity as we have seen it in Atonement and Eucharist, where the divine is overcoming the human? You would say, well, the outcome is that the human gets better and better and better in the measure that divine is overcoming the human. The human is improving. That's the outcome. So that in the chapter on marriage, we would have an improved state of humanhood, wouldn't you? If the divine is working within me and always brings something higher and higher out in me, naturally, not even could make the trip in 1 second. it took him also time to overcome step by step the human. Therefore, it's a time process. Therefore, it's not so that marriage will show the outcome of it is perfect manhood. See? That's not the outcome, the immediate outcome. That may be the theory behind it. But the actual outcome is that we are every day a little bit better, that we are every year feel we make progress. Every year we feel we are perhaps a better mortal, better human. It's better humanhood. That is the first sign of demonstration. So again, to define the point of intersection, we have as the vertical God's nature, as the horizontal you had there exaltation or demonstration or improvement. So it's an improved state of God's nature within us, you see. It's a demonstration of God's nature within us. It's an improved state, and we call that within us a better human. Better humanity. Perhaps you can put there higher humanhood. And that's what is there. Don't you feel that reasoning, the flow, is very natural? It's very natural. Once one has found that marvel of having seen the calculus according to what category thought has to flow, that it has to flow from Word to Christ to Christianity to science, we suddenly find that this flow is something very natural for us, because after all that is innate in our consciousness. In each one there is a kind of spiritual sense and a divine sense, so that divine sense is appealed to and therefore gets the true motivation, and so it becomes within us something very natural and not something academic. So here you have those three tones. First, that you say, all right, my starting point from where I start, the proposition I have is that God's nature is me. I have that, and I have to use that. Then that God nature begins to work and overcome the human nature within me. And as it that's a term in the Eucharist. And as it overcomes the human nature within me, I show forth a higher humanhood. That's marriage.